This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ SusD, on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Okay, let's get right to it. This is the Q&A featuring a bunch of local Eugenians who have various relationships with the anti-war movement on the at the Metro Encircle Films presentation of The Boys Who Said No, who are the people that are the reason we don't have a draft right now. The people said no to the draft of the Vietnam War. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends.
So we're about to meet the film director, Judith Ehrlich, and we have a surprise or two for you as well. Thanks, everybody, for sticking around, those of you who did. We'd like to continue the experience with some conversation here. And I have a couple of guests that are going to spend maybe 2 minutes per person. Saying a few things to help you, the audience.
I just want to honor you. If you could just raise your hand, were you alive and experienced that as young college student type people? Yeah. Thank you for living through that in a principled way. I'm sure many of you did. I was just a little kid.
really?
Wow. And I'm here because I'm with a group called Beyond War. And Anne is the sister of the director. And she is also with Beyond War, so I'm
going to be... My name is Jim Anderson. I'm a member of Beyond War Northwest as well. And Peace Committee through Southtown Rotary. And one of the things we're going to be focusing on is nuclear arms. The DOD has required $1 trillion to update and modernize nuclear weapons. And certainly deserves a little pushback. That's what we're doing.
And I'm Ann. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm Ann Ehrlich O'Brien, and I am a member of Beyond War for quite a while now, and I just want to give you a really brief history. How many of you were involved with Beyond War in the 80s? I talked to some people, a few people. It was thousands were involved. Well, that went away when the Iron Curtain went down. So then, when we invaded Iraq, Martin Jones, an internist in town, his wife Gail, a counselor in town, sat at their kitchen table and resurrected Beyond War. And eventually, we became Beyond War Northwest. And so, Kara's going to talk to you about what Beyond War Northwest has become.
Yeah, and I just want to clarify again. So Beyond War, in the 80s, helped with, there were tens of thousands of groups across the country organizing people to speak out against nuclear weapons, and played a role in the 80s against the proliferation of nuclear weapons. And so we exist today as a very small group here in Eugene.
So I have the pleasure of introducing my baby sister, Judith Ehrlich, who is in Brisbane, Australia.
Thanks, Anne. lovely to be there with you and the Eugeneites. It's rainy here. I thought that was appropriate. It suddenly started raining 5 minutes ago before I came to visit you in Eugene. I just wanted to say that I'm very pleased that you have a great house there for the film, and I'm just here to take questions and answer any questions for you. But I did want to say one thing, because you're talking about nuclear war, and I just finished a podcast that's going to be, it's an animated podcast I did with Daniel Ellsberg, and it's on a website called diffusenuclearwar.org, part of rootsaction.org. And we're going to be expanding that. There's a couple of these 3-minute pieces that are up there now if you want to look at them, but we're hoping to do some organizing around, well, they already are doing considerable organizing around reducing the risk of nuclear war with Dan, who's an expert on that, as well as a whistleblower against the Vietnam War. So I guess just if you have any questions about the film or, you know, how it's made or any of the characters or, oh, I did get one film in advance, one question, and I will answer that, which is often asked, which is what about, where does this leave us now that we don't have a draft, and how do young people relate to war and to serving in the military? And this is one of our, Bob Zhao, who's one of the characters in the film, he's been just out there constantly taking this film to college groups and all over Los Angeles area. He goes a couple times a week and takes the film out to groups. And he says it's the average class, like a regular class with 30 people, one might know what the Vietnam War is. Often, sometimes two, but that's it. I mean, not only do they not know enough about military service in the draft or the draft resistance, they don't know that there was a war. And that's sort of where he keeps telling me, you know, you gotta really, this is a story people do not get that have, or in the more recent generations. He's taking it out to not high school, but college students, and that's the reaction, which I thought was interesting. So, I mean, it doesn't leave us, I did work in the organization that was Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors, and we were working with people who were, had joined the military and then had a change of heart and wanted to get out, and we helped them get out of the military. We're still doing some of that work, another group organization is. But it's definitely, there's no more, I don't think any of us want to go back to conscription. They certainly don't seem to want to in Russia, and they seem to be leaving in droves. And there's also a mounting movement in Israel to resist conscription, which is mandatory there, which is an interesting development.
Yeah, my name is Jack Rady. I refused induction in Fresno in 1966. I was part of the anti-war movement throughout. Helped organize a march of 500,000 in San Francisco in 1969. I have a problem with the film to some extent. And my problem is this. It very much emphasizes those who took a principled, nonviolent position and voluntarily went to prison to protest the war. And bless them, they were always there and they were always important. They were only a very small part of the anti-war movement, which, and the movie badly mischaracterized Stop the Draft Week in Oakland, and didn't even mention the one in New York where I was. That was not the Weather Underground. They did not go out to make war on the police or Oakland. They went out to nonviolently demonstrate in the streets against the draft and to stop the buses from getting to the induction center. It was the police who brought the violence and made it a violent demonstration. Thank you.
Thank you. I've done some pretty extensive research on that week, reading every newspaper that was published at the time and talking to many, many people who were there. And I can understand why you might say that. I think that it was definitely the intention of the organization to stop the draft nonviolently. And as Joan Baez says when she gets off the bus, that was the case on day one. And then the few days in between were not as big of crowds, but towards the end of the week, a lot of people took advantage of the activity to come in with a more aggressive approach to the police. And of course the police did aggravate it. And as you could see from the footage, the police were out there and, you know, en masse the whole week. But the intent, you're correct. I think we do represent that correctly. The intent was very much to do nonviolent resistance to the draft. But it did disintegrate into a very violent, and that's what David talks about when he said it was an opportunity we missed by the people who came and created a violent situation with the police. And I also want to say that David Harris did die 2 weeks ago now, I believe, and he's sorely missed, and he was ill for a long time, but we just lost him. We've lost several of the members of the film since it was finished. And now, the film I made right before this, which was about Daniel Ellsberg and the Pentagon Papers, Dan has gotten a lot of attention this week by announcing that he has pancreatic cancer and writing the most beautiful letter about dying and about his willingness. He said he's always worked better on a deadline and he lives better on a deadline. he's an amazing guy and we're very close friends. And
let's get some other discussion, shall we? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, you are.
Hi, thank you for your beautiful film. My name is Steve Deere. I when people say they'll be brief, they're never brief, but I'm really going to try to be brief. I was thrilled to see Michael Ferber in your film. The man in Boston who was the resistance organizer, Michael hired me when I was 21 out of college to work with him at the Coalition for a New Foreign and Military Policy, and I hope to see him for the first time since then in a couple of weeks. Anyway, Wayne Kidd was killed in 1964, Captain Wayne Kidd, in Vietnam.
I'm sorry, I'm not in trouble hearing you. Could you go ahead?
It's okay. It's my wife's father. She was 1 year old. And her stepfather, Jerry Stutler, did two tours, became a drill instructor in the Marine Corps, spent his life in the Marine Corps, and lived with PTSD. So I want to thank everybody in this room who raised their hand and was doing something to resist this war in the 60s, because I've been part of that so-called Gold Star family for 40 years, and I know the loss that is forever. And I know the loss of one American soldier, one of those 58,000 soldiers, and then, of course, the million people or so in Vietnam who were killed. Anyway, yesterday, there were 10 people standing outside protesting our country's involvement in Ukraine. It's controversial, but it's been going on every week for the last 10 weeks or so, and that was the most people we've ever had, 10 people. It's a group called Planet versus Pentagon here in Eugene, and we invite you to join us and get involved. There's sign-up sheets. Michael Kerrigan and Sue Barnhart are down there in the corner. I'm here, there are other people perhaps here. Anyway, thank you for your beautiful film, and I hope a lot of people see it. I'm sorry I don't really have a question. Your work, the work that's reflected in the film, has to be happening today, and I hope you agree with that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Who actually protested and actually took risks during the Vietnam era? At least 25 people.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
Okay, well,
could you repeat that?
So what we did during that era was we stood up and we protested and we refused to get inducted, or we refused to go along with the military orders, and we went to the brig and so forth. And there's 25 or 30 people right in this audience, in this small audience with the gray hairs, who actually did this. I just happen to be, I'm not a good man, but in 1971, I had found myself in the Navy. And because of the heroic actions of people like Jack Rady and the people who came in the earlier years in 68, 69, it was relatively easy for us to organize our units in the Navy and get general discharges and then go on and go to college on the GI Bill. And I helped to organize to several dozens of people in my small way and get out of there in my usual selfish manner. But I actually appreciate the efforts and the sacrifices that were made by people who came before me in 68, 69, 70, when actually aircraft carriers refused to sail. I mean, people made huge sacrifices before I came along.
Yep.
Thank you all.
Thank you. I don't think I answered the first part of the other gentleman's question. When you make a film, this is my fifth film on this general subject, World War I, two conscientious objectors. I've done a radio series on international conscientious objectors. I've covered big groups of conscientious objectors. This was a very targeted film. It was about a specific small group, and it wasn't supposed, ever intended to tell the story of the anti-war movement. It was intended to tell the story of a group that's been completely forgotten historically. And that was our goal, and that's what we focused on. So there was no intent to tell the story, the bigger story, of either conscientious objectors or of the, certainly not the anti-war movement. So just as it related to this movement. So just to be clear.
Thank you so much. I'm only sorry that there wasn't a shot of Robert McNamara 20 years later saying that they had made a terrible mistake creating this war.
I think he did that in Fog of War, in Errol Morris's film. So that you might, if you haven't seen that, you would love it. It's a great film.
Am I next to speak? Okay. One of the problems, for a while there, university students, by the way,
really did know about Vietnam. What happened was a lot of old soldiers and veterans went into high school to teach history. And sometimes they had whole months and they'd take the whole year and talk about Vietnam. So there was a time. I'm afraid that's past. Most of us are retiring now. I have the same criticism of this film that you were given at the beginning. It does focus on a small group. And when seen by a naive observer, it might be assumed that that group is larger than it was. In fact, what we found, and I was at the University of Wisconsin, what we found was that every time we demonstrated against the war, we were attacked by the police. I still take painkillers every day, twice a day, for what they did to my hands, which was make them into pulp. So we finally decided that nonviolence it was sort of like SNCC. You got tired of it. You got tired of being beaten. You get tired of it. So every time they tried to, we would just turn away and go down State Street and break every window and bust up and burn things and raise hell and make the war so expensive that they might actually think they would quit. There was a time when I thought about turning in my draft card. In 1965, I got a CO. I don't think I'd do it today. By the way, just in closing, there's a lot of gray hair in this room. Some of us don't even have much hair. But the fact is that today's issue is the environment. And that's what young people are mobilized around. I think it's very important that you show these kinds of things, but it's the environment that's the issue today. Hats off to the resistors. Hats off to those of us who, by the way, I thought Mark Rood was an idiot, but hats off to those of us who tried to make the war too costly.
Well, in response to that, the groups that have used our film the most are it's a very very progressive group focusing on environmental issues.
Extinction Rebellion. Extinction Rebellion.
Extermination Rebellion. Is that right?
Extinction.
Yes, and they're in Australia too, and in the U.S. They're international. But they have used more copies of this film to organize than any other group. So they see that we're not saying do this about the Vietnam War now. We're saying here's how resistance works. And we have had a lot of comments from young people saying this is, and a lot of reviews saying this is a blueprint for resistance. It doesn't have to be only resistance to the Vietnam War. And it isn't only about the people. It focuses on these groups who use nonviolence, who even though they got bored with it, and it was really hard, and it's always really hard, they kept at it. And I think they're a model for people who don't want to resort to violence, even though that's an easier route. And I can say I hit a cop over the head with an umbrella when I was a cow, in the streets. And I wouldn't do it now. I think I've been inspired by these people that there are other ways to do it. And if you can really stick with it, it's an actual path to success, which violence never is, in my opinion. And I hope that came across in the film.
It did.
It feels like a Berkeley audience to
questions.
Me. I've got to say, you guys are so opinionated. My God.
I was at a Seal Mar. I was at a Seal Mar in 1962, which Joan Baez talked about there in the film. And along about 1963, I managed to get myself flunked out of college and I went to try to get a CO. And at that time, one had to profess a belief in a supreme being, which I could not do, still can't. And I was offered the opportunity to join in with a group in San Francisco. And I had no faith in the court system of the United States. So I did what a lot of other people did. I joined the Coast Guard. And in boot camp, we actually had a parody of the Semper Paratus, which is the motto of the Coast Guard, it's a song. And there was a clause in it that says, we joined to dodge the draft. And it was sung as we were marching around Alameda, the boot camp in Alameda. And in my time in the Coast Guard, I thought I was gonna stay home. Did not, except for 8 months in San Francisco at the very end. The rest of the time, it was basically overseas. And I just commend you for this film. I commend the people who had faith that they were going to go to jail and it was worth it. I was too chicken. However, I have been a peace person all my life. When I got out in 1968, I dedicated myself heavily, was involved in all of them in San Francisco. I took the bus from Eureka to San Francisco to do it. And even went to DC on, I believe it was 1970, was the huge mobilization in DC after Kent State. And it's only films like this that will keep what happened and what was necessary alive. And I just thank you for this film.
I mean, to me, it's such an interesting history and inspiring, and I really hope that it does. You know, it's not that it's all going to happen again. It's not going to happen like that. But it's nice to keep that spirit alive, and I appreciate you, your comment.
One more little thing, and this is for the audience. The Selective Service System still exists. There are still draft boards. Here in Oregon, I moved my draft board registration up from California to here. But Oregon, every single county in Oregon has vacancies on the draft board. And if the draft ever comes back into existence, we need people on the draft boards that will be able to justify people who refuse to go. So if you want to do something, get yourself on a draft board.
And see the seminars by Howard Welsh.
Actually,
seminars on how to take over your local draft board.
And then everyone's happy because it's just poor black they're going.
Just to FYI, the Congress debated the draft this year. They were considering adding women to the draft because they felt like they were going to be criticized for it not including women. And they came very close to agreeing to that. So it comes up every few years, 2 years, I think it comes up before Congress. It is not a dead issue. It's still every young person is required to register at 18, and fewer do, I imagine. But so a lot of people have not been able to have GSA jobs. They can't. You can't get scholarships in states that have federal grants for school. There's a lot of still penalties for refusing to register. So it's still with us.
Hello.
But no draft. I would be extremely surprised if there's ever another draft. We don't need bodies anymore.
Hello, my name is Frank Harper, and I'm one of those who ended up in Vietnam. My father was a World War II veteran. He was wounded 3 times. He was with the 133rd, and he ran mule trains up in the Apennines. He was also in North Africa also. But one of the things, he would never talk about the war except just basics. What he did with the mules, he ran supplies and ammunition up to the front, and he hauled casualties back on the mules. So he was, you know, major PTSD. And I had to live with that. But the one thing I couldn't do, I would never be able to face him because he was a staunch Republican and said, no, you are not, you're gonna serve this country. So one thing to think about, and after my father died, I found a bunch of pictures of which he never showed us, And in there, one of the pictures had three Japanese soldiers in there that were from the 442nd, whose parents were in internment camps. And the other thing is, in searching my dad, he never mentioned anything about what happens if you were in Europe or North Africa and you resisted fighting. You either got hung or you're in front of a firing squad. Private Eddie Solvik was one of them. And when I was finally discharged from Vietnam on July 2nd, 1972, I share that date, a similar date, on July 2nd, 1945. And that was Lewis Till. He was Emmett Till's father, who was hung for supposedly raping. And there were 96 Americans that were either hung or put in front of the firing squad. And that is something where you mentioned there's only two students in the class. This needs to be taught. That if we don't, we're going to lose all that. It's going to repeat itself. And boy, I don't want anybody to end up in another Vietnam-type war. So thank you for this.
I've never heard that before. Where was Emmett Till's father hung?
When the Germans surrendered on March 7th, 1945, my dad was in Pizzo, Italy. On July 2nd, 1945, my dad never mentioned anything about the hangings or the firing squad. But Lewis Till was one of them. And there's a place called the Fifth Element. It's where, right now, roughly 96 of the soldiers are buried in unmarked graves, except for a number. So it's a really tragic part of the war. Because I remember, in Broadway, the sailor kissing the young girl in the ticker tape parade. And so, so.
We've got somebody else there.
Go ahead, Stan.
Great.
Sorry for turning my back on you, but this mic doesn't seem to be working.
Nope.
Speak up.
So, just by way of introduction, my name's Alan Rosenfeld, and I'm a little bit younger. So the first time I was arrested opposing the war in Vietnam was May of 1971, the May Day demonstrations. I was 17 years old, and I resisted the war ever since. Thank you so much for the film. It was beautiful film.
Does it work?
Hello. Oh, yes. I won't repeat the introduction. It was a beautiful film, and I really admire those people in the movement who stayed principled. They were a small group. The ones who voluntarily sacrificed and went to jail. But what gets forgotten is how much the resistance to the draft wasn't opposition to the war. Opposition to the war was resistance to the draft. It was because so many young people were being forced to go and give up their bodies and their lives that they ended up resisting the war. That's sure. The problem with ending the draft. That was a strategy of the Nixon administration, was they ended the draft in order to slow down the resistance to the war. What we now have now is, and they need less soldiers because it's such a high-tech military now. Doesn't mean they're killing less people.
Right.
They have drones. But the reason we don't have a draft right now is also because we have such extreme poverty and we have so much manipulation of the poor high schools is where, whether it's poor whites or poor blacks who are not just being manipulated, but also realistically are given no choice. There's no, the war, if you survive, lots of people I know, I talk to, are making that choice. It's a tragic choice they have to make. That they know if they manage to survive a tour in Afghanistan or Iraq, they'll then come home and have a GI Bill and have have an education, and otherwise they're going to be working in a Safeway or a drugstore. I'm talking too much, I know. I'm sorry, but the people who resisted the draft, the people who kind of turned in their own cards, let themselves be punished, were heroes. And it's a beautiful film acknowledging them, and I'm grateful for that. But we have to remember that, it's the self-interest that led to both the large resistance to the war and then
kind of end of the anti-war movement when, you know, when people felt it wasn't going to be them dying anymore. And that's that greed, that self-interest is what we have to struggle against. You know, whether it's, you know, the environment is moving people right now because it's affecting everyone's lives. Everyone knows it's, you know, that none of us are going to escape except for perhaps, you know, the idiot who thinks he can fly, get his own spacecraft. But, you know, it's the greed, it's the selfishness. And I talk too much, I'm sorry.
Thank you. That was awesome.
And I think you're probably ready to leave by now, but just that I think that one of the things this small group, and yes, it was a small group of people, but they are still at it. Most all of them that went to prison are, until their dying day, have been activists and still involved in the movement. And it wasn't just because they were facing the draft, which they were, and that motivated them to think about it and to take committed for life. So it's been, you know, that's been really wonderful for me to get to know all these wonderful humans who are still at it and working hard to make peace.
Thank you.
I'm not sure. I think we're done, right? Thank you all for coming. Sam? And I'm really pleased you're here with my wonderful sister, who's a real peacemaker up for her life. And
I just wanted
to
Okay, speaking to the microphone. I just wanted to say before people left, I'm sorry, I didn't get your name, or I don't remember it. The woman on the screen, Judith, mentioned, or someone here mentioned the climate crises is what is grabbing young people's attention. I want you to know, and you possibly do, the Pentagon that takes half of our income taxes that we pay, or that those of us who pay income taxes on April 15th. Okay, well, anyway, half of it goes to the military, half of it goes to the Pentagon, and the Pentagon is the number one emitter of carbon in the world. So we, as the superpower, the superpower in the world, needs to get our house in order, i.e. defund the Pentagon and move that money to climate change.
Thank you so much to everyone who is here and who stuck it out.
Mm-hmm.